RCR with Paul Brennan, Reality Check Radio.
So Naomi Wolf, author, journalist and founder of Daily Cloud, is back with us on RCR. Naomi, nice to have you on our radio station again. I hope you're well.
I am as well as can be, and it's always such a pleasure to speak with you and your audience.
Thank you. Have you been censored lately? There's a first question.
The answer is yes. Yes, about half an hour after I went on Alex Jones to share my analysis based on my former life as a political consultant and White House spouse, that it was my judgment that the Biden family would turn out to have been involved in the attempt on the life of President Trump. I had all of my electronics frozen, and then for a week I was kicked off of X in spite of my having gone through all of the support, get me back on, thousands of people emailing or tweeting Elon Musk. The X support said, sorry, there's nothing we can do. You've lost your entire account. I know you feel bad about it. Too bad. So yes, that happened.
But you came back. So something happened there.
Yeah, but it's not okay. Happened was Alex Jones spoke to, you know, Elon Musk's people. And I'm grateful, but it's not acceptable. You shouldn't have to have one of the most famous people in America talk to the staff of another one of the most famous people in America in order to not be, censored and exploited by what really should be treated as a utility. You know, there's literally no reason X or Facebook or any of these social media platforms should have the right to do what AT&T or Verizon can't do, which is pull the plug on you if they don't like what you're saying, you know, to a vendor or to a colleague. It's very serious, and it's very psyop-y in the sense that, yes, I'm back on, but I shouldn't have to be grateful. You know, what's really not acceptable is, I mean, so many things are not acceptable, but X is monetizing my feed, which is fine. That's the deal. But that means, like, in what business do you have a business relationship that involves revenue in which you're the other side of the contract, which doesn't exist, right? But the other side of the people who are monetizing you can damage your business for no reason, you know, no recourse, no justification. There's no litigation. Like it is the whole thing. And it's especially evil because we're already suing Twitter. I'm actually a fellow plaintiff with President Trump for the last time they banned me at the behest of the White House. So everything is not okay with it. And I did call on their advertisers and shareholders to really think about it if they want to be on the side of suppressing the person who spoke up about women's health, you know, suppressing speech in that way.
Yeah. So how do you think that process worked? I'm really curious now. So you say something on Alex Jones, you just explained what you said there, and then all this happens. How do you think that the process of that works?
I mean, it's hard to say, right? Because it looks like I was hacked, but also it looks like I wasn't just hacked. Because if I was just hacked, then X would have reinstated me as soon as I went through the support process with X. So I can't speculate. I don't really understand it. But we do know from discovery and from various lawsuits by two attorneys general against Twitter, then Twitter and Facebook and the White House, that the last time involved pressure from the White House and then people at X tasked with executing what the White House wants. So since those people probably have security or national security or DHS, you know, comms at the very least, I could imagine that there could be a two-pronged attack, right, on the outside and up from the inside. But I really don't know. And it's like, I'm bored speculating about it. You know, like I don't mean that I'm bored talking to you about it. I mean that I'm so over the attitudes of these companies that they get to turn on and turn off speech and unleash the Hellcats of the White House or the, you know, national security apparatus or not, depending on which way the wind is blowing, that I kind of don't care, you know, like it's nefarious, it's scary, it's creepy. I don't care. My business was harmed yet again. My reputation was harmed yet again. I'm so beyond caring. I'm just like, I mean, I'm a CEO of a tech company, you know, that depends on social media reach. It's not just me in my basement, you know, having my opinion. I've got shareholders. I've got, you know, responsibilities. I've got a staff. You know, this is a completely, just in business terms and capitalist terms, completely unacceptable way to deal with a business colleague, which, since they're monetizing the heck out of me, that's what I am. And, you know, it's beyond heinous, and they should be careful, because there is such thing as a change of administration. If President Trump gets in, a very important advisor is going to be RFK Jr., who was targeted by these people, and they are perfectly capable of targeting them right back. So I'm just saying, for the record, these people should back off and watch out. And I mean that peacefully.
I want to get on to RFK, obviously, but it just occurred to me, the letter that Mark Zuckerberg has written to Jim Jordan, basically fessing up, is that because there could be a change of administration and you got to get ahead of it?
Yes, this is not aimed at you. I'm just like, it's bad when they're evil, but when they pretend not to be evil, it's worse, you know? So yes, you know, I actually was just asked about this by Emerald Robinson, who was also kicked off of Facebook. She was kicked off of Facebook the same way I was, which is the most craven way. X just, you know, banned me and then smeared my reputation globally. Facebook did to her what they did to me. They changed our password over and over and over and over for months, so that every time we tried to log in, we couldn't. And they even tasked, I'm going to release my whole email exchange with Sheryl Sandberg about this. In my case, they tasked a very handsome young engineer for months to sit with me for hours at a time, logging in and going through the password change process and logging in. And I keep saying, I'm CEO of a tech company. I know that login is the easiest thing to fix out of all the technological problems that any, you know, platform can have. Literally, if your engineers can't, or your developers can't fix that in 15 minutes, you need to fire them and get new developers. Like, it was farcical. And this is what they did to me and to Emerald Robinson, which means they did it to other people too. And people died because of Facebook, because at the time they were banning, you know, me and other people trying to raise the alarm about the mRNA injections. There was a Facebook group with 19,000 participants about vaccine injury, and they closed it down. And one of those young women had nowhere to go. All her friends were inaccessible to her, and health, you know, this very kind of preliminary people just sharing information about what could help, who would treat you, who would see you, that was cut off. And she committed suicide. And I told Sheryl Sandberg about this, you know, but to no avail.
Wow. And that was, I think, in the letter, reference to Biden's as well. So here we have between what's just happened to you and that, there seems to be a common intersect there.
Yeah.
So it's them.
it's certainly them. I don't know which them it is, but it's one of the them.
Who's the they and who's the them?
Exactly.
I watched some of the interview you did with Alex Jones. First of all, I mean, I've been aware of you for quite some time, and I never thought I'd see you on an Alex Jones show, gotta say. Yeah.
Well, you know, strange bedfellows. I mean, I actually first went on Alex Jones in 2007, 2008 with my book, The End of America.
All right.
Because out of all the legacy media, I wasn't yet, you know, canceled then, but we were coming out of the Bush era and heading into the Obama era, and no one on the left wanted to talk to me about the fact that there could be fascism in America because our guy, you know, got elected. So Alex Jones was the only person at that point who was willing to talk to me about the demise of our Constitution. I mean, that and a bunch of conservatives, I should have realized back at that time what kind of, which way the wind was blowing. I didn't, but I was, you know, happy to talk to him. I mean, it's so funny. It's like my talking to him led to a wave then in 2008, a wave of, you know, mockery that I would talk to Alex Jones. But if no one else takes seriously the fact that there could be a fascist coup in America, it's not Alex Jones's fault. It's everyone else's fault.
Yeah. You told him that Act Blue are so powerful. Here in New Zealand, we don't know about Act Blue. I know it's a DNC setup, and I want to get to the other stuff, but that caught my attention. Who or what is Act Blue, and why are they so powerful, and what does that mean for Trump?
Well, Act Blue is the fundraising arm and the kind of get out the vote arm of the DNC, the Democratic National Committee, and they're highly, highly mechanized in a very sophisticated way. So my poor mother, for instance, you know, will donate $35 and then she's on their list forever. They're tweeting, you know, texting her, they're emailing her, they're calling her. They're trying to get people to, you know, have monthly subscriptions. They also then will bombard her with campaign literature and they organize. So I think what I was trying to explain to Alex Jones is that it's not just Act Blue. That's an important part of it. But the whole apparatus of the campaign on the left is so digitized and so sophisticated that you can literally, as we saw, switch out one candidate, switch another in. Biden's out and Harris is in. Totally illegally, according to FEC law. Like, you're not allowed to take one campaign and switch, you know, you can't fundraise for one candidate and then dump that one and bring in another candidate. It's completely illegal.
And take somehow the money. Yeah.
Somehow they've done that. And the whole apparatus of the surrogates, meaning the people who speak up on behalf of the Democratic ticket, you know, the fundraising, which I mentioned, the higher dollar fundraising, which is done by kind of boutique shops, the ads, the ad buys, the ad design, the ad buys on social media, and then the grassroots kind of unions getting people out to vote, healthcare workers getting people out to vote, trial lawyers, you know, mobilizing people to donate. It's all so sophisticated that it almost doesn't really need a good candidate. You know, that's what I was trying to warn the other side.
Because it strikes many people here that Kamala Harris is not a good candidate.
I'm glad you guys can see that. How can you see that?
Well, it's kind of obvious. It's hard to, I guess, break it down. But, some of us know the history of the last campaign, and I think President Trump points this out. She didn't even make it to Iowa, dropped out first. There's something about the word salads, the laugh. You know, it's the package doesn't seem marketable, but right. Yet it is, it seems.
Yeah, well, that's the machine, right? And they're doing exactly what you can expect, which is keeping her from sitting down and answering questions. And you know, the legacy media is so in the tank for the Democrats that that's not a bad strategy if you can get to November with that strategy. And on the kind of consumer side, people like my loved ones on the left are so brainwashed about conservatives and conservatism and President Trump and RFK Jr. for that matter, that they'd rather have two bad candidates, but the whole kind of corporate nexus of Democrats around them than Republicans.
Okay, I figured it would be something like that. In terms of RFK Jr., and was that a monumental announcement? Can we call it monumental, what happened over the last weekend? Is it at that level?
Totally monumental. Absolutely monumental. I do want to note it's something I've been advocating for almost a year, but it is very monumental. Yes.
Yeah. Okay, so what does it mean? He's not suspending the campaign. He's just pulling out of some states and other swing states. That's kind of how the broad brush we understand. Is that the strategy there?
It makes sense. I mean, he's not suspending his campaign because that lets him keep taking votes from from Kamala Harris, Harris Waltz in blue states, but he is asking people, he's withdrawing in battleground states and asking his supporters to support President Trump. Whether they will or not remains to be seen, but he's what's called throwing his support and throwing his supporters to President Trump in battleground states. It's a very smart strategy. Again, not to blow my horn, but women are often like swept away from history. And I will note that it's exactly the strategy I laid out in an essay called something like RFK Jr. plus Trump plus Vance plus Shanahan, the only path to victory. RFK Jr. brings the swing voters, who are these suburban white women in battleground states. And President Trump can't win without them, in my assessment. So it is a huge deal that RFK Jr. has joined President Trump, also for stylistic reasons, because President Trump and his vice presidential pick, J.D. Vance, they're not effervescent together, and they're not exciting to suburban white women. They're alienating to suburban white women in a lot of ways, or many suburban white women. So RFK Jr. and Shanahan bring the caring about children, the caring about children's health, the glamour, the charm, you know, whatever. Like, a lot of people love President Trump. To me, he's a very unattractive personality. I'm sorry, to a lot of people, they just don't like his personality. And it's hard, like, even if I can recognize that he had really good policies in a lot of ways and no wars and, you know, Abraham Accords, it's just a lot to think about 4 more years of horrible tweets and insults to women and just the unrestrained id and hugeness of his persona. So it's so important that RFK Jr. joined his team, because it's like the alchemy of when Gore joined Clinton. It's very similar. Like, Clinton was so, again, you know, id and impulse and unrestrained and narcissistic and loud and, you know, overwhelming, you know, that when Gore joined, it was like, there's a grown-up in the room. And it was more than the sum of its parts. And so RFK Jr. brings that quality. He's incredibly disciplined, almost never goes off message, you know, very inspiring, very unifying. He understands politics, you know, it's in his family's blood for generations. Super smart, very sophisticated. I mean, I'm sorry to go on and on. I'm like dumping chunks of essays I've written, you know, into your ears, but for cultural reasons, it's very important that he's joining the Trump ticket, because there are people who might vote for Trump reluctantly, but are very uneasy not having one of us in the White House, and RFK Jr.
with us. Gotcha. Our audience, I know, because we've had feedback on this since that weekend, is kind of over the moon to hear someone now talking about food.
Yes.
And health.
Yeah.
And big pharma in the way he does. It's like, you know, the sun's kind of started shining, is the feeling.
For sure. I agree with that. Yeah, it's magical. I mean, you know, it's amazing, but I hate to be a downer, but at times like that, I always want to warn people that someone can't be a hero without our active engagement. And it's not enough to just, even if they win in November, you know, God, I'm going to say God willing, because I'm supposed to be nonpartisan, but there's actually a coup in my country, and I don't think it's partisan to want our republic back. But even if they win, RFK Jr. can't keep advocating those things with the pressures that are on a president or presidential advisor or head of HHS or whatever he becomes, unless there's organized support and pressure from the grassroots, from us, because pharma doesn't go away. They'll just be lobbying the White House. You know, big ag doesn't go away. They'll just be lobbying the White House. So we have to help him do what he wants to do, he can't do it without us. And people have to really understand that, because everybody wants a white knight to just save them and, you know, deliver their Christmas list.
Going back to what you mentioned at the start, the connection between, let's call it deep state, and that assassination attempt. And I saw Dr. Phil with Trump and how it's, you know, a million to one chance or even more than that, that he's still alive and it's divine intervention. Are we seeing, or are you seeing, because you're closer, obviously, some kind of pattern emerging that is showing a direction back to somewhere as to who is behind that?
I don't understand the question. I'm sorry.
Well, I guess I'm trying to politely say, was it that deep state trying to get him, or was it this weird kid who managed to scramble onto a roof? Because if it's an assassination attempt by the deep state, I mean, it raises the heat so hot, doesn't it?
I mean, from what I think, this is why the plug was pulled after my interview with Alex Jones. You know, as I keep mentioning, I advised two campaigns and I was a White House spouse, which means I know the chain of command and the process for events very intimately. Advance teams are called advance teams because they go in advance of the event to make sure that there isn't a line of sight from a building, you know, that a sniper can get on to, that there are no holes like that. And so, and nothing gets okayed unless it goes right up the chain of command of the Secret Service, all the way up to the chief of staff, all the way up to the principal, right? So none of that kid couldn't have done that without the active participation of the head of Secret Service. And that's why I suspect strongly, I predicted before there was a coup that there would be a coup. Like the day after President Trump was shot at, I said, there's going to be a coup because a crime will have been committed probably by Mrs. Biden communicating with the head of the Secret Service in order to create a gap in security at this event. She was at an event 52 minutes away in the same state at a very secure closed event, but she had the Secret Service. Yep. I knew that was likely to be the case. So only a principal, and by principal, it would be the president, the first lady, or the chief of staff. Those are the principals in that office. Only they can direct, or not, it wouldn't be a direction that's overt, indicate to the head of Secret Service to allow so much failure that something like that could happen. And it was so clear, it's so clear to me that if you're ever going to do an investigation, you're going to find this because of the way that the Obama, Schumer, Pelosi group was scrambling to get away from the Bidens and to throw them under the bus and get rid of them, get them out. And Pelosi pretty much admitted in an interview that they pushed him out. He said they pushed him out. Well, you don't push someone out like that unless they've done something really bad. So that's why my analysis is, if we ever investigate those patients, the breadcrumbs lead to Mrs. Biden.
That's the second time. Last time we talked to you, Jill came up. So, because from here, she just looks like, you know, the first lady and, you know, come on, Joe. But there's more to it than that, right?
I mean, everyone's human. And I guess it's more that, how can I put it? When there's that kind of, like, the assassination attempt was very poorly executed. Right? It wasn't well thought out. It was very impulsively directed. It was very unsophisticated. It didn't work, right? You know, everyone, whoever planned it, thought that by now the nation would be in mourning. But how can I put it? The chief of staff isn't going to commit something that stupid, right? The Homeland Security isn't going to be that stupid. The Pentagon isn't going to be that stupid. The CIA isn't going to be that stupid. Who in the cast of characters around a demented president could be that stupid? It's either the first lady, consumed with narcissism and power hunger and not very bright, or the impaired Hunter Biden. So my that's why my guess always goes to the first lady.
Gotcha. I want to get back to what you said about the, is it white suburban women?
Yes.
Who are the key to an election win, right?
Yes, correct.
And I see that J.D. Vance has stated that if elected, Donald Trump would not support a national abortion ban, would veto such legislation, advocating for state-level decisions instead. How much does that issue affect how suburban white women would vote?
Well, that is a great question. It's the question because for many Democrats, and I was one, it's really two issues, right? It's abortion and the environment. And for a lot of people, now that the abortion issue has kind of been taken, not off the table, but moved down to the states, there's a fear that conservatives will get rid of gay marriage, which is so random because I don't think anyone's really talking about that. But it's so important, but it really also depends on how Trump and his team message the issue. What I mean is the fact that the abortion issue was pushed down by the Supreme Court from a federal law, Roe v. Wade, to the states, if it's messaged correctly, it's a great blessing to President Trump and to conservatives because, and I gave him the language, again, not to be self-regarding, but in one of my essays, because he gets to say, this is a state by state issue and the majority of voters in every state are women and they are deciding it for themselves. You know, this is the right way to do it. The states are deciding for themselves. If they want abortion, they're keeping it like California. If they don't, they're getting rid of it like Alabama, I'm guessing. And it's right that it's in the hands of the people of the states. And that's just a fantastic, decades since Roe v. Wade, conservatives have stumbled, even like pro-choice conservatives, like, secretly Bush Jr., I'm sure, was a pro-choice conservative on some level, right? His wife was, which is their way of saying, I kind of am too. But it's such a gift that they don't have to posture around the choice issue, right? And even if they are thoroughly pro-life, that's still a gift because they can say, I'm thoroughly pro-life, but it's in the hands of the states. So I think it's sensational. They're not making very good use of it, but I think it's wise for him to take that off the table so that the Democrats can't win by scaring people about a federal abortion ban, which honestly would scare me too. Like there are a lot of reasonable people who might think that conservatives are awesome on the economy and great on the Middle East and really good on crime and the border, but really don't want to see a theocracy in which there is no right to any, abortion self-determination at all. So it is a gift if they play their cards right. I don't mean to sound like callous in saying that.
Couple of quick questions to finish on. What is the current impact of COVID adverse reactions, disabilities, I don't know, even deaths? I think I heard you mention 1 million disabled. I don't know for what time period that was. It didn't seem like a very long time period. I've heard Ed Dowd talk about these figures as well. So what's the current situation there? Because it'd be interesting to contrasted per capita here too,
Yeah, very important question. And I do want to tell everyone that our book, The Pfizer Papers, which brings all these headlines to people in book form, is coming out next month. And I'm asking people in New Zealand to pre-order it on Amazon. Those are Ed Dowd's numbers that I cited. He says, and his data are solid, that 1 million Americans are identifying themselves as disabled every month.
I thought it was every month. Oh my God.
So the numbers are catastrophic. And also, let me just report to you as an eyewitness, anecdotally, I don't know what things are like in New Zealand in terms of just the health of your friends, basically, but anecdotally, everywhere I go these days, someone will say, my sister has cancer, my sister-in-law has cancer, my brother has cancer. You know, my daughter-in-law has cancer. It's...
And everyone's got the flu all the time, off work. So, and that never used to happen before. Okay, just to wind up, This sounds like a crazy question. Will there actually be an election? There probably will be. But do you think if the Trump RFK Vance package wins, can't think of another word, will they ever get there? Will they make the inauguration? There are people asking these questions now. Is there going to be some kind of move? Kim.com, I see, went through the whole list of things that have failed, and he said, expect the worst. Now, I don't know what he knows, but
it's not good.
You know, do we expect the worst, do you think?
I mean, I you know, my basement shows that we are planning for the worst. You know, we've got our 6 months of food and our generator and our weapons and our ammunition.
Right.
I have been predicting for a long time that these months leading up to the election would be very dangerous. I don't look, if these people have shown that they could try to kill a former president, you know, and we haven't even mentioned that President Trump's plane had an emergency landing and his vice president had an emergency landing. That's in like 2 weeks.
Yeah, within a few days.
Right?
Yeah.
So I don't see why, and they stripped RFK Jr. of Secret Service the minute he said he wasn't campaigning in battleground states, even though he hasn't suspended his campaign. It's insane. So these people are murderous, and they've shown that they're murderous. I do expect an October surprise that'll be bad. You know, I do expect that.
Should we end on that happy note?
on a happier note, I think, you know, I think we in America anyway have done a really good job beating away the worst. And I do think if we continue to hold our ground and fight, we'll be well positioned, even if the worst happens, to, you know, regroup. And but you know, as my husband's always saying, it's a war. We're in a war. And I think that's true.
Yeah. Naomi Wolf, always good to hear what you have to say. Thanks for coming on again. We appreciate that.
Thanks for having me.
From caps to tees and bags to bumper stickers, we have you covered. Visit www.realitycheck.radio/shop.